Sanctus have any argument about who's the best conference right now. It's really not that close. The SEC is the best conference.
What's up, everybody, and welcome back to Saturdays in the SEC. We're coming off a wild week two. Close games and upsets all over the board. We're going to go ahead and jump in. One of the games of the day, Alabama at Texas. Alabama ekes out a win on the road. Obviously, this game didn't go anything like we thought it was going to or anybody else in the country thought it was going to be. A lot of credit goes to Texas. Obviously, Alabama pulls off a 20-19 road win, but I thought Quinn Ewers played extremely well the short time he was in the game. He got hurt at the end of the first quarter with a shoulder injury. But I thought from Alabama's perspective, obviously it was the most penalties ever in the Nick Saban era, 15 penalties for 100 yards. So it was an uncharacteristic type day. It was a little worrisome, I think, because you saw some of the road struggles from last year kind of carry over a little bit. I'm not surprised with the start of the game. I thought Steve Sarkisian had a great script to start the game. It's kind of be expected. He's coached against this defense a lot. He's, in my opinion, I think the best offensive mind in college football, and the best offensive coordinator that Nick Saban's had. I mean, he did a terrific job. He did a great job again on Saturday. I thought he had a great game plan, making things comfortable for his young quarterback. And then Hudson Card, when he came in the game, I thought obviously he gave some trouble with his legs, even though he's a little hobbled, but he still made a lot of plays with his legs and gave them a great chance to win the game. But I think really at the end it just boiled down to Bryce Young kind of took over in the fourth quarter. He goes 15-19, 136 in the fourth quarter, play of the game, gets out of a sack on the final drive, dips the edge defender. And then runs for a first down, and that really kind of set up that game winning field goal by Will Reichard. But yeah, it was definitely a uncharacteristic day from Alabama from an execution standpoint, from penalties. I wasn't that happy with the game plan necessarily, or the adjustments really. I thought Texas obviously had a great game plan, and it was like how Bill O'Brien and the offensive staff really didn't have any adjustments to counter what Texas was doing. A lot of five-step drops. Their defensive line got a lot of pressure. The offensive line wasn't great for Alabama. Could never establish the run. I think they only averaged about 3.5 yards per carry, other than Jace McClellan's 81-yard touchdown run in the first half. But just want to get your thoughts on what you saw. Obviously, this was much different than everybody expected, but nonetheless, it was a great game to kick off Saturday.
Oh, absolutely! And speaking of Quinn Ewers and Hudson Card both, I think that Sarkisian did a fantastic job of setting up the plays and having them just do quick two-step drops and get the ball out. Very rarely were they in the pocket for a long period of time. They were a lot of two-step, get the ball out quick, or slants. And even the balls they took shots down the field, they were out of their hands quick. He was not giving the defense any time to disrupt him or to disrupt his quarterbacks and to wreak havoc the way that they planned on doing it, everybody expected them to do. So I thought that they did a great job of that, but also that Texas offensive line was able to give him the time needed to make those throws down the field when he had to stay back there a little longer. And they did a lot better than I expected them to, especially with two true freshmen and, one redshirt freshman. But this year was just my takeaway from it, from me watching it. I don't really have any skin in the game. But I thought that, we talked about, you said the O-line is kind of going to be a struggle or whatever. I think that the biggest offensive struggle for Alabama was their receivers. Yeah. Because there were several times. Now, Bryce Young had pressure. There was a couple times they sent blitzes or they just, penetrated. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, I can count on two hands how many times that he was sitting in the pocket, not pressured, waiting for find somebody to throw to. And he had to either throw it away, take off, or he got pressured and had to, take off scrambling. He could not find anybody open yeah. down the field. They weren't getting great separation off the line, but they could not get open down the field. And I thought that that was the biggest, like, oh, crap for Alabama, because nobody expected this our wide receiver core to be the same as last year or the year before that. Like, we understood that. But I also didn't think – they did not meet the expectations of what people thought they were going to do. They dropped a couple of balls that were first downs that could have extended drives. That was really killed Alabama and gave Texas life, especially when you're at Texas. That stadium's going to erupt. But I just thought the receivers really was a big factor of why their offense sputtered, because they couldn't get open and they dropped a lot of balls.
Yeah, they obviously
– That was just my takeaway.
No, 100%. I think, you know, offensively, like I said – I thought I would like to see them do a little bit more. I thought later in the game, you know, obviously it's fourth quarter. Urgency's up. You're down. You got to come through with a couple drives here. And I thought as the tempo picked up, the sharper they looked. You know, the urgency raises, your tempo, you get a little more rhythm going. I would like to see them do that a little bit more. I think there were 63 snaps for Alabama, I believe. Only 19 of them came before 6 seconds on the play clock.
Wow.
So, I mean, there was – I mean, it was almost every play where Bryce would have to check at the line of scrimmage. And, I mean, it was – it felt like almost every time. So, really, about 60 or 70% of the time, it was three – to like, we barely got the playoff because we were checking. And I would just like to see them play maybe – obviously not like a Tennessee or somebody, but just – go up tempo a little bit more, because I feel like Bryce is perfect for that.
Oh, yeah.
And it seemed to get the offense in a little bit more of a rhythm when they went to it late in the game. And obviously, when it's later in the game, you kind of have to get a little more urgency. But I would like to see them do that a little bit more, because they haven't done it as much as they did in the past, say, you know, 2-3 years ago.
Right.
So I'd like to see that maybe be added in a little bit more. I just think he's so crisp, and the receivers, they're just getting the ball out quick, kind of like Texas was doing a little bit early, and just get the ball out of his hands quick. I mean, he's really good at reading the defense and getting the ball out of his hands quick, you know, if it's schemed to do that. So, like the receivers obviously weren't getting open. I kind of wonder, it's like, is it a schematic thing or is it a personnel thing? Because I don't think – personnel wise, yeah, sure. There may not be a guy that's like a Jameson Williams like on the roster or that's got that kind of talent right this second.
Absolutely.
But I just look at their personnel, and there's guys that should be able to get open. Mm-hmm. Like, they've got guys that can get open, I believe. I mean, they're skilled and talented enough to do so. I just wonder schematically if they need to adjust things a little bit, because you know, like I mentioned, a lot of five-step drops. They were kind of playing their linebackers back a little bit as well. They took away a lot of those shorter intermediate throws a lot. So I just kind of want to see what they do forward to adjust against that, because I honestly felt like this was a 2021 Iron Bowl rerun for a while. It felt eerily – like it was a deja vu at certain points of this game. I was like – like, especially the five straight three and outs from the third possession to about the seventh or eighth, it was just like, man, this looks eerily similar to the Iron Bowl. We didn't make any adjustments. It was just like, we're sticking with our plan no matter what, and we weren't able to get any kind of rhythm or momentum going. So I want to see how they adjust that going forward. You know, and we'll find out, you know, before too long. That's the good thing about it. But I just feel like it's more of a scheme thing than a personnel thing. Because I know the guys on the roster, they're talented enough to make plays and get open. And they did struggle. And I feel like at times with Alabama, it's happened before. They get on the road and a few things go wrong, and it has a tendency every night to kind of be a domino effect.
Snowball on
you. Kind of snowballing you a little bit. Offensive line's not playing good. The pressure, you make some penalties, and then the receivers start dropping some balls. And it's just a cumulative effect, I feel like. That's happened a few times. In the Iron Bowl last year was a prime example. A few things go your way, and just you weren't able to stop the bleeding for a while. So, but it turned out, I mean, obviously from the standpoint of – this was a 21-point Alabama spread or 20. So, you know, I think if you look from it from that aspect, you go, obviously they fell way short of expectations, whatever they thought. But if you look at it from, hey, game starts at 0-0, everything's out the window, this was a super evenly played and competitive game. Oh, yeah. I mean, it turned out to be so much more than people expected. And I think a lot of that goes to Texas. They really played a fantastic game.
And their game plan the biggest thing Sarkisian did that in preparation was their game plan for Will Anderson.
Yes.
They obviously knew he was going to get double teamed for the most part, but they were able to double team him a lot of times they used two linemen, but there were several times where they were able to double team him without giving up another lineman, because they would use Bijan Robinson out of the backfield. Yeah. Mm-hmm. He'd go over there and give him that little shoulder just to give him a little extra body on him to take him out of the play. And a lot of people were saying Will Anderson took himself out of the Heisman race this weekend. Now, I agree he didn't have the game that everybody thought he was going to have, but also he had two guys on him at all times, opening up a free defender. So it's not all on Will Anderson. It was also some of the other guys didn't play to the expectation they were expected to play at, or the expectation that they are always perform at, such as Dallas Braden and I can't think of the linebacker.
Chris Broswell,
and Toa To'o. I don't think any of the big names on defense played to the expectation of what they usually perform, but a lot of people are giving all the hate to Will Anderson, and you just can't do that when the man was getting doubled all night. He was opening up hole or freeing up a defender on, but he's getting all the hate for it, and just because he didn't make every single tackle. Now, he didn't have the best game, but he also, like I said, he made an impact by pulling two guys every single time.
Yeah, I think, too, the main thing I think he gets criticism for is just the penalties they had. Had a couple offsides. He got a personal foul. So it was just kind of uncharacteristic because you rarely ever see him get a penalty. I can't even remember the last time he had a penalty coming into the game. And, you know, him having three or four penalties is where a lot of that criticism come from. Because I thought he did make a big impact. He did get pressure several times that, yeah, maybe he didn't get a sack, but he did affect the quarterback a little bit. And that's what I love about Sarkisian is, obviously, he was able to put his guys in a good position against that pass rush, getting the ball out quick. Even, like you said, even the deep balls, they were coming out pretty quick.
I mean, super quick.
But what I love about him is how he gets a favorable matchup for his best players. That's why, especially his receivers. You saw Xavier Worthy.
He is a dude.
And how he's able to scheme up and get his best playmakers one-on-ones. He does that as well as anybody's. He did it over and over and over with Devontae Smith in 2020.
Yep.
And he's doing it. And Xavier Worthy's that kind of game breaker as well. So
he reminds me a lot of Jameson Williams in the fact that he can blow the top off the defense.
Oh, he can.
I mean, that first touchdown, well, it wasn't a touchdown. He ended up dropping it. But he was wide open by 5 yards.
Yeah.
I don't know how he dropped that ball. And then they hit him again right there before they scored, you know, when he got tackled at like the 3-yard line.
Yes.
He blew the top off. I think he had like five catches for 97 yards. So if he'd caught that ball in the end zone, he'd have had like 140 yards, 130 yards receiving. It's going to be special. He's going to be playing on Sundays for sure. He might be the best receiver in the college football this year.
He's really good, man. And I just love how Sark's able to get those favorable matchups, those one-on-ones that put his guys in great position to make plays. So, thought he did a great job. And same thing with Texas defense. They had a great game plan.
Absolutely.
And I think, obviously, according to everyone, you know, everybody thought, okay, Alabama's going to roll in here. They're going to be able to run the football. They're going to be able to dictate pace. And Alabama, I'm sure, was thinking that as well. And they found out pretty quick that they weren't able to do that. And a lot, you know, I think they got a lot more from Texas than they were expecting. And so did everybody else, obviously. So
yeah, what's up with this Texas-Bama matchups with the Texas quarterback always getting hurt? We can't figure out a legit for the fans, they can't figure out a legit decisive, okay, Alabama's just better than us or we're just better than Alabama. Because in the national championship game, starter went out early, and they still were able to put up points. This game, starter goes out early, still able to put up points. So there's that discussion around both. The last two times Bama's played Texas, or Bama and Texas have played, the Natty and then last weekend, the talk around those two games for forever is going to be, well, if Texas starting quarterback didn't get hurt, they probably win that game. And I don't believe that at all for the national championship game, but there that does have some substance. That argument actually has some substance in this game because of the way that Ewers was going. I mean, he played for, what, a quarter and had 130 yards passing? Yeah. The way it was trending. But also, that's probably play the game that injuries happen. But that conversation is always going to be around Texas-Bama. Maybe next year Texas-Bama, there'll be no quarterback injuries.
Yeah, for real. I mean, I guess if Ewers or whoever, or maybe it's Arch next time. Yeah. I don't know. They are coming to the SEC, here very soon. Yeah. So we'll see. They kind of hurt Hudson Card a little bit, too.
Yeah.
Maybe you ought to get QBs that aren't made of tissue paper.
Wrap them in bubble wrap.
They need bubble wrap their quarterbacks. But I want to get your opinion, too. What did you think about the roughing the passer penalty on Quinn Ewers? That's the one I want to talk about first.
Was that when he got hurt?
When he got hurt, yeah. What did you think, just personally?
I'm going to be honest. I'm going to be a hypocrite if I say I hate that call and I hated that penalty, or if I say that I like that penalty, because Nick Fairley used to do that to quarterbacks all the time. I mean, he did it to Arkansas, he did it to LSU, he did it to Alabama, he did it to Georgia. Those are four that I know for a fact he did it on, and he could have done it on more than that. But everybody hated him, and everybody wanted a flag. He got flagged sometimes, but I always hated when he got flagged, and I would always defend him. So I'm a hypocrite if I say I think it's crap. I think he was just making a play and just playing football. I don't think he intentionally, wanted to hurt him and, dove on top of him in the ground. I think he was just playing football and trying to let him know, hey, we're going to be here. When you hit a quarterback in the game, you don't get to hit him ever. When you hit a quarterback, you're going to make it count so they know, hey, we're coming, and it's going to shake him up. It's going to change the game. He might throw a pick. He might throw it away. He might take off running a little earlier, disrupt a play or break down the play. But I thought that it shouldn't have been a flag because I don't think it was as blatant. But also, I thought there shouldn't have been a flag on the roughing the targeting, roughing the passer on Bryce in the end zone.
No, they got that one 100%.
They end up taking the targeting away. But
yes, and the whole concern with that as well is they misstated saying it was rough. They said roughing the passer targeting, yeah, but they came back and said the targeting was the roughing the passer. So when they took the targeting away, they took the roughing the passer. They actually came back and said they misstated. He said it.
How did that not count as a safety, though? That's what I want to know.
I don't know. I thought, he gets tackled. He's kind of laying on the guy, and he throws it. I get why it wasn't intentional grounding, because Jace McClellan's standing right on the goal line. It looked like he threw it away before his elbow hit the ground. I think ultimately they came to the right conclusion, because it was no targeting and it was no roughing the passer. Right. That was complete bullcrap. Right. I don't even know where they got that from. Yeah. So I think ultimately they came to the right call. They just took a backwards way to get there. But
going to the original question, I think it should not have been a penalty because, again, I used to cheer when Nick Fairley did it, so I'm a hypocrite if I say he shouldn't do it.
And I think, too, the main reason for me is I understand when you hit a quarterback and you drive him into the ground, but if you look at the play,
he jumped.
Quinn Ewers jumps.
Yeah, to throw.
He turns around and jumps to throw it out the back of the end zone. He's still in the pocket, by the way.
Yeah.
But, so he jumps to throw it. And then, literally, before he comes down, that's when Dallas Turner hits him.
Yeah.
But if you look, Dallas Turner didn't put his weight down on him. I mean, he literally just tackled him. That's all he did. Like, he fell on him.
He didn't
pick
him up and body slam.
No, he didn't drive his weight into him at all. He just tackled him and fell on him. That's what happens when you tackle somebody. And so I didn't understand why it was rough in the passer, honestly. I mean,
because he doesn't hurt his shoulder that way if he doesn't jump. Not saying that he shouldn't have jumped, but if Ewers doesn't jump, he doesn't get landed on like that. So it was just like you said, he was just tackling him. But if he stays on his feet, he tackles, he probably just lands on his back. But the fact that he jumped, it made it look like he was body slamming him, but just because he was in the air, and just come down that way.
I'm not trying to be biased in any way. Like, honestly, if he would have drove him in, I would have understood it completely. I just didn't see that. Honestly, I just thought he just tackled him, and I didn't agree with that. I just thought, and honestly, I would say that if it was any other team, like I was just calling it clear lenses.
Right.
I just thought it was a clean hit. You saw a few people calling it a dirty hit. I'm like, I just don't see that at all. I mean, yes, he falls on him, but that's what happens when you tackle somebody. You know, he you know, like you said, I mean, he has the right to jump, but when you leave your feet, you put yourself in a position to be
hurt.
Yeah, I mean, you know, slung down pretty hard. So
don't leave your feet is what I was always told as a kid.
Yes, but anyways, that turned out to be a crazy game. I'm looking forward to see what happens moving forward. Really tough game with Arkansas in a couple weeks that we'll get to talk about coming up. You know, here in the next week or two. But
I feel bad for ULM. I really do. Because a week after that, I would hate to be the next opponent. And Nick Saban, history repeats itself always, but history also speaks for itself when it comes to Nick Saban. When he has games like this, rarely does that same type of performance happen again that season. Usually it's turned on the next week and it doesn't turn off again. They might get beat, but they won't play bad. I do not think that we're going to see this version of an Alabama team or anything close to it. They're going to be turned on, locked in, ready to go because they realize how easy they could get beat and how quick it could happen. They see we're not just Alabama. We can't roll out there. I feel sorry for every opponent Alabama has to play from here on out. They're still in the top four for a reason. They are a legit team. They might not be number one right now, but they are not going to be this. They're not going to show that performance again, I can guarantee it.
Yeah, I think especially from a penalty perspective too, because I think that was kind of a little bit uncharacteristic. Obviously, the execution wasn't great either. But, you know, you can look at it this way. You know, I think that's – I mean, this is typical early season stuff. This happens with a lot of teams. Yep. So I'm looking forward to see how that plays out going forward. And that's the beauty about college football is we will get to find out.
Absolutely.
So we can speculate all we want, but we'll get to find out as the season progresses. That's the beauty of it. I want to get in, obviously, to these upsets because it was crazy. Texas A&M, man. That App State comes into College Station and stuns the number 6 ranked team in the country.
And got paid $1.5 million to do it. $1.5 million to come in and win.
They come in, and I've got to read some stats. Obviously, we're going to break this down for a minute, but just some unreal stats that you. I mean, you look at the final score. Okay, 17-14. App State runs 82 plays to A&M's 38, and as you mentioned earlier, one of A&M's scores was a kickoff return.
They 7 offensive points in 60 minutes of play.
82 plays for App State to 38 for A&M. I mean, just that discrepancy there is unbelievable. App State, time of possession, 41.5 minutes to A&M's 18.5 minutes. 315 yards for App State, 186 for Texas A&M. 22 first downs to 9. Like, that is hard to believe, honestly.
App State had 181 rushing yards, and A&M only had 186 total yards. App State dominated this game. They dominated the line of scrimmage on both sides of the football. But I think clearly time of possession was their game plan because they had the ball for literally more than half the game.
Yeah, it was – like you said, this wasn't one of those upsets where it was, okay, if something –
It wasn't an App State-Michigan upset.
Yeah. I mean, obviously this is App State's biggest win since then.
Mm-hmm.
And this wasn't one of those – You block a field goal run. You know, it wasn't one of those and you to get a fluke play or have a fluke thing, you have to put yourself in a position
right.
to do that. But in this game, App State, they just
beat
out at yeah, they just straight up beat them. I mean, the stats say it, your eyes say it. They control the line of scrimmage.
If this was an Arkansas A&M game and Arkansas won that game, you would say, "Wow, it was a hard fought game." You know, tough nose. You know. What 3 yards in a cloud of dust type game, and Arkansas just came out with the win. That's exactly what you say, but it just because it's the logo, people are stunned. But absolutely, Appalachian State was the better team on Saturday for all four quarters, and there was no question about it if you watched this game. Appalachian State was 3 steps ahead of A&M all game.
And what's stunning, too, is a little bit is you look at A&M and Jimbo Fisher's offense. This guy's an offensive coach. Has had good quarterbacks and stuff like that. His offense and his quarterback stink.
Oh, wow. Oh, yeah.
I mean, they are not good offensively at all. I mean, honestly, I think he's falling completely behind the times. You've seen guys like Nick Saban, Kirby Smart, and Kirby's kind of in the middle of this adjustment right now,
yeah.
even coming off a title where, you're seeing them change their offensive philosophy a little bit, or getting guys that are able to help them in that area, like Nick Saban. Nick Saban gets beat by Auburn and Ole Miss in 2013 and other teams. Well, guess what? He goes, man, I need to rethink my process here. I need to get some guys in here that can help me in this area. Well, guess what? He went out and got Lane Kiffin.
Yep.
And other guys since then. And you've seen how they've evolved offensively. I think you're right in the middle of seeing Georgia do the same thing. Look how different they looked against Oregon, throwing the ball all over the field. That's not typically what Georgia would do.
Yeah, Georgia's not a throw-first team, but this year they just might be. And with that tight end room they got, I don't blame them.
Yeah, but you look at A&M, it's the same stagnant offense. Mm-hmm. They haven't adapted like some other teams have, like the two I mentioned have. And the thing that concerns me, or would concern me if I'm an A&M fan, is well, Jimbo Fisher is an offensive coach. You see him on the sideline with about 20 play sheets. How do you have 20 play sheets and your offense is terrible? Yeah. I mean, he's over there holding all these play sheets and they're not good.
You can't even get 200 yards.
That's the thing, is that's what would worry me, is this guy's an offensive guy. He's went this long. He hasn't changed. Well, is he going to be willing to change? Because that part, I mean, he's the head coach, obviously, but that part is 1,000% his show.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that's why he's there, because, I mean, he's had good offenses before. And I just think his scheme, just their play style, it's just a little too old school, I think. I just think he's kind of falling behind the times. I just want to get your thoughts on it, because, I mean, I don't know if he's going to be – I don't know if he's going to be willing to change his philosophy. Because once you're kind of stuck in your way, is he going to have that adaptability that Nick Saban and some other guys – because I feel like it's easier for defensive coaches to maybe change their offensive philosophy. But is it – since he's an offensive guy, is he going to be able to do that maybe as easily as those other guys have? That's what would concern me a little bit.
Well, I'm going to give my best Jimbo impression right here and rebuttal that. Well, hell, Cam, it's won me national championship, got me Heisman Trophy winners, got me the highest rated recruiting class in college football. I don't think I need to change, okay? That's exactly what Jimbo would say, but I think you're 100% right. It is stagnant, but also, he's there. He's there for a while because his buyout for the next 5 years is $95 million. Yeah. So whether he wins 3 games this year or turns it around and wins 10 games for the next 3 years, he's going to be there for a while, because A&M's not just going to shell out $95 million for somebody not to coach to turn around and pay somebody else at least $50 million. It just ain't going to happen. So he's going to have to change, or he's going to drown in it and just eventually get bought out whenever his buyout does go down. But I agree with you 100% that I think that it is a – part of him being stuck in his ways because of the way he is and the way that we've all seen him handle media, especially recently, the way he just talks about things. You can just tell he's stuck in his way, and it's his way or the highway. Let me handle it. You know, that interview, you know, he's going to do it his way no matter what. He doesn't want no help, and if he thinks it's going to work, well, by God, it's going to work. And I think that you could be correct on it. It could go downhill because of that. Because he's not interested in evolving or trying to go out of his way to evolve and make his program better. And obviously, his longevity as a coach. But that's just Jimbo. He's stubborn. And from what I've gathered over the years listening to him and watching him, I believe he is very, very, very stubborn.
Well, I think, too, is you don't want to overreact, but you just...
This is not an overreaction, though.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like I said, I try not to overreact, but... It's hard not to react appropriately when you look at this game and how it went and at what's ahead for them.
Yeah.
I mean, they don't have an easy game till they play UMass in November. I mean, there's a lot of those games they're capable of winning.
Oh, yeah.
But they can lose every one of those. Like, they're capable of being beat by everybody that's remaining as well, outside maybe UMass. But, I mean, they've got Miami, Arkansas, Alabama, Mississippi State. I mean, that's a just to name a few. I mean, that's a gauntlet the next 4 weeks. But I just don't know how quickly they're going to be able to. I mean, you can't change your scheme in a week or two.
They got Miami this week, and then But they also, they got to travel to Mississippi State, who's trending up. They got to travel, obviously, they got to travel to Bama. They got to travel to South Carolina, which Shane Beamer, that's late October, so they could be turning around by then. They do host Mississippi State, and they do host Florida, but then they got to turn around and got to go to Auburn, and then they host LSU. But they got some tough road games. I mean, those environments, Auburn, South Carolina, and Alabama, and Mississippi State, all those environments are tough environments to play in. They're very loud, especially with them damn cowbells down there in Starkville. I mean, those places get rocking, and I don't know. I think you could be right. It could, and especially if they lose two, that last 6 weeks of the season, if they lose too early, those last 6 weeks of the season could be ugly. They very well could go in and play Bama at 1-2. I mean, they legit could, 2-2. They could lose to Florida or Arkansas. Those two games, I think they're going to go 1-1 in those. But they also could go 0-2 in those, and they could be 1-3 when they play Bama.
Yeah, I think, I mean, like I said, you look at what they've got ahead, and I don't know what they're going to do at quarterback. I mean, he said everything's on the table. They just haven't clicked. There's absolutely no flow to their offense. Puts a lot of pressure on their defense. I mean, their defense is good, but I just don't know how it's going to go. I mean, I just don't know how it's going to trend going forward. I mean, it's going to be fascinating to watch. I mean, I think too, like, I mean, even some of the games they can win, like, you go to Starkville, I think Mississippi State is one of the most underrated teams in the country. They're playing really good football.
That's a good team. And in the little mini pod last week, I said it was absolute disrespect to Will Rogers and Mississippi State to have them only as a 10-point or 10.5-point favorite. I mean, I took them in the first half and the second half, and they covered both of those with these. I mean, they covered the first, they were up 18-10, and then they ended up winning, 39-17, whatever it was.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, they're a good football team.
The thought that the Arizona would actually be able to hang with that program, it just baffled me. With the way that offense goes, and they could have a bad drive and still have 9 plays and at 70 yards and end in a field goal, and that's a bad drive for Mississippi State the way they're trending right now. I like Will Rogers. Will Rogers is going to make a great NFL quarterback. The dude can sling it all around the field. He makes great reads and he's got great touch, but I think Mississippi State is going to beat them handily. I'm probably going to take State. I already know I'm going to take State in that week. Whatever the line is, I'm hammering State.
I believe
that. That's like 3 weeks away, though.
If I'm not mistaken, I believe that game's right after the Alabama game, too. So that's
It actually might be. Okay, so they have Miami. A&M has Miami this week. Then they have Arkansas. Then they go to Mississippi State.
Okay, it's before Alabama.
And then they go to Bama. So they have to go to Starkville and then to Bama back-to-back weeks. That's tough. That is tough.
Yeah.
After playing, they got Miami, then Arkansas, really tough. But then they got to go to Starkville, to Bama, and then to South Carolina. But so tough 5 games in a row. You got Miami, Arkansas, Mississippi State, Bama, and South Carolina, and then you follow that in Mississippi State. So their next 6 games, and 7 with Florida, but that's it back at home. But their next 6 games is going to be a brutal gauntlet because this Miami team is legit. They're not bad. Cristobal has turned them around. Their identity now, they have an identity now. They're going to smash you in the mouth.
Yeah, I really want to see. I'm most interested to see how they respond, how they turn around and respond this week. Coming off of this, can they put it in the rearview mirror and move on, or does it kind of linger around? And I'm really interested to see if things were to go south this year. You know, I listened to Late Kick with Josh Pate a lot. He's talked to people around Texas A&M that are like, a lot of this freshman class, or I don't know how many or anything, mm-hmm. but a lot of those, if this goes south this year, a lot of those guys may not hang around for this.
Yeah.
You know, because a lot of the guys, let's be honest, came there for the NIL deals and maybe not as much for Texas A&M. So that's something to keep an eye on as well, too, because they had a lot of momentum going coming off that recruiting class. And you know, if that goes south and they lose some of those guys, that's gonna be a tough blow and a little salt on the wound, you know. But I really want to see how they respond this week because you mentioned their schedule. They don't have the better quarterback in any of those games.
No.
At all. They don't have the better quarterback this week. Tyler Van Dyke's good, man.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you're playing against Will Rogers, KJ Jefferson, Bryce Young.
Defending Heisman, man.
Yeah, I mean, they don't have the better quarterback in any of those games.
No.
So, I mean, it is a little – I mean, it's actually very concerning, you know, if you're an A&M fan that you're having this much struggle with your quarterback for 2 years in a row. Mm-hmm. Obviously, Calzada got – I mean, Haynes King got hurt early last year, but you know, this quarterback problem's kind of lingered on a little bit. So curious to see if they make a change there, or if they change anything at all going forward this week and then throughout the rest of the year.
I'd like to throw this number out there. You know, we're numbers pod. We throw numbers around a lot.
Yeah, love numbers.
Kevin Sumlin's in their first 50 games. Kevin Sumlin was 36-14, and in their first 50 games, Jimbo Fisher is 35-15. So Kevin Sumlin was better, and A&M was raising hell about getting him out of town to get Jimbo or to get somebody else in there, but you know, get Jimbo in there because the writing was on the wall that he was coming. But they were raising hell to get him out of there. Now they got the guy $95 million buyout, and he's done worse through 50 games.
Yeah, and two, especially if it were to go south, you get this kind of recruiting class, and then you top it off with this year. Say you go down in a hurry and then you lose some of those guys out of that recruiting class.
It's going to hurt. It's going to affect this year's recruit class coming in, the 2022 recruiting class.
Yeah, it's a...
Or 2023.
It's going to be some uneasy feelings here. And I would be feeling pretty uneasy when I look at my schedule forward. And you see those line of quarterbacks and teams that you got to play. And a lot of tough road games, Arkansas neutral site, to Bama, to Mississippi State, to South Carolina.
You think we could see a Max Johnson switcheroo in there?
I mean, I think you're going to see somebody. I don't know if it's going to be Max Johnson, Connor Wagman. I think they're probably going to end up making some kind of change just to see if they can get anything going. But really curious to see how this game plays out with Miami. Going to be fun.
I'm probably taking the Canes.
Yeah, I mean,
depends on the line, though.
Yeah, I think A&M's like -4 right now, I think. So
hammer the Canes!
But, yeah, it's going to be fun. And the way this season's been, or the first 2 weeks have been, A&M liable to turn around and cover the four. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you never know. It's crazy. But moving on a little bit from that, the Marshall Thunder and Herd have come in to South Bend and beat Notre Dame pretty handily. This game really wasn't that close. The Marcus Freeman honeymoon is over.
This is the first time in program history that a coach has started 0-2.
Yeah.
In Notre Dame's history, one of the longest, if not the oldest, college football program ever, he has the worst start as a head coach. I mean, it's just two games, but still, the worst start in history. This was a gimme game. You're supposed to beat the crap out of Marshall. And they beat you. I mean, it was a good game. It's a close game, but they shouldn't have even been a game.
Yeah, and Notre Dame, too, scored pretty late to cut this game to 5. They were down 26-15 in the fourth quarter. They scored late to cut it, make it a little bit closer. But, and the funny thing, too, is Marcus Freeman coached the bowl game last year.
Yeah.
So
he's actually 0-3.
He's 0-3. Yeah. You know, since he's up, because I guess technically he's the interim head coach. Yeah. But in the three games he's been the head coach, he's 0-3. You know, obviously coming off the game with Ohio State, you know, everybody's feeling pretty good. Like, hey, we kept it close. But
so what does that say about Ohio State?
Yeah, I mean, obviously that definitely that win is not going to hold much weight now. And Notre Dame's starting quarterback's out for the year too.
Yeah, the next 4 months, I saw that.
So yeah, it's going to be tough sledding for them because they have a lot of Power Five opponents on their schedule, so there's not going to be many gimmies left for Notre Dame, but. Yeah, shout out to Charles Huff, Marshall's head coach. He was an assistant at Alabama. He was the running backs coach actually for Alabama just a couple years ago. So cool for him. That's a huge win for his program. So congrats to him on that. They came in and played a really great game, and I don't think the game was really necessarily as close as the score was. You know, Notre Dame made it a little bit closer late, but they. Kind of like the A&M game. They pretty much controlled the game. So,
absolutely.
So, big props to Marshall. Hey, we are Marshall, baby. But, yeah, so that was a wacky week two, obviously. You know, I feel like if you got to win in week two, you ought to feel pretty good because it felt like everybody was going down.
Oh, yeah.
You know, A&M, Notre Dame, Baylor, us three top 10 teams.
That Baylor-BYU game was good.
Yeah, it was. But I want to get into a little bit one of the biggest wins of the day, Kentucky going into the Swamp. Man, Anthony Richardson was seeing ghosts, man. He had a rough night.
Absolutely.
To say the least.
Mark Stoops had a great defensive game plan. And so did the Gators. Their defense played really well. I mean, Will Levis was getting smoked in that first half. He really couldn't get a pass off without having a guy hit him right in the mouth every time. He showed resilience. He was tough in the pocket. He stayed in there time after time, just getting pummeled. But they were able to run the ball really well. I mean, they had two guys or one guy go over 100 yards, but going to have Chris Rodriguez back more than likely next week or the next. So when he does come back, it's going to make that offense catch that second gear, I believe, because he is going to be able to establish that run game a little better than the other two backs. We've seen him do it over the last 3 years. The dude, he's raw. And then you have Will Levis, like I said, I saw his leadership abilities or capabilities show in this game. Late in the game, you know, when they needed something to get going in on offense to really seal the deal. But yeah, Anthony Richardson, you know, he was getting some Heisman love last week, and this week, you know, he struggled. I mean, he ran the ball well, but he still don't have a touchdown pass on the season. But I thought that Kentucky played really well, but that offensive line is still a problem because, like I said, Will Levis was getting hit a lot. But this Kentucky team surprised me. I know I picked them to go 11-1, but I nixed that last week. I don't think they're going to go that. But they surprised me. I did not expect them to come in here and win. And then you look at Utah. They put up – I mean, they played a nobody, but they put up like 72 points this week.
Yeah.
So, like, I mean
– they were a little ticked off, I think, after last week.
So – that just also shows how much better the SEC is than everybody else, because Utah is probably going to play in the Pac-12 championship this year, if not win it. And Florida handled them last week, and then Kentucky came in and handled Florida this week. But I think Kentucky had control of the game the whole time, but Florida's defense did look good.
Yeah, they did. I think, too, they... I thought it was pretty telling there in the fourth quarter. Billy Napier went for it in their own territory.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think he realized at that point his defense was kind of out of gas.
Yeah.
And it was like, we're down seven, need to keep our offense on the field here. So I think he just had a feel for it and was like, if we punt it back to him, I don't know if we're really going to get the ball back, or at least with any time. So it was definitely a pretty big gamble. Didn't work out.
Yeah.
And then Kentucky ends up kicking a field goal to go up 10. But yeah, you could kind of tell he was kind of gambling there, because he's like, I mean, I know my offense is sputtering, but my defense is kind of out of gas too, a little bit because of my offense.
Right.
So, you know, he kind of had to take that risk there, and, you know, Kentucky ended up get into a two-possession game. But defensively, man, they had obviously the pick six off Richardson.
Mm-hmm.
On an out route they picked off, and then they picked off another one in the flat. Obviously, pick six on one, then the one in the flat that was returned deep in their own territory. So that, I mean, that obviously set up two Kentucky scores off those interceptions. So, yeah, and I thought they did a great job, too, because on numerous occasions – They would leave a linebacker as a spy. They were not going to let him beat him with his legs.
Yeah.
You know, like, okay, if you're going to beat us and make plays on it, you're going to beat us from the pocket. And they felt confident enough that they didn't think he could do that. And they kept a spy on him in the run game and just really limited his legs, too. I mean, I thought they had a tremendous game plan. Obviously, baiting him into two interceptions was big, but like you said, they didn't run the ball well. I think they did a little bit better once Florida was fatigued late in the game. I thought Kavassier Smoke had some really good runs.
Yeah.
You know, kind of wearing them down. They were kind of milking the game away a little bit. Thought they did a good job in that aspect. But like you said, they still can't run the football very well. But Will Levis, like you said, his leadership, he was able to step up in some critical spots. Wasn't perfect, but he made the plays when he needed
to.
So, overall, you know, it was kind of a typical Kentucky performance.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I mean, everybody kind of doubts them and, you know, picks against them, and then they just come in and do it again. You're like, man, how they do it, you know? And it's just they're just fundamentally sound on all three phases. So, I mean,
absolutely.
they just keep doing it time after time. They're just steady, man. That's the one word Kentucky. They're just steady.
And speaking of Kentucky and Mark Stoops, there's some rumors going around. You know, Scott Frost just got canned at Nebraska. There's some rumors going around that they might come after Mark Stoops. And I heard today on McElroy and Kubelik, and I think that this is a good point. I think that they said he takes that phone call for one reason and one reason only. To either get more money for himself or more money for other coaches or something for some leverage for him. He's going to take that call, say, okay, you want me? And he's going to go back to Kentucky and say, well, I got the job offer at Nebraska. You can either pay me $5 million more or you can pay my assistants $5 million more, whatever it's going to be. But I think he could potentially use this leverage. But he's not going anywhere because he already makes more than Scott Frost was making. And he, like we covered last year at the end of the season, he's got raises built into his contract every time he has a 10-win season.
Yeah.
And things, and a 12-win season is even more. So he has raises built into his contract. But I think he could take that for leverage for his staff or for some for himself if that does happen.
Yeah, I think if he takes another job, I think it's going to be – to me, that's at – I mean, I think that would be – at this point, it's a step down, obviously,
oh,
considering where Nebraska's at.
Yeah, he's built Kentucky from the ground up. I don't think he leaves there, but if he does.
Yeah, I think if he does, I think it's going to be somewhere that's – you know, obviously, you know, he had the feud with John Calipari. John Calipari wants an indoor practice facility.
Right.
I could see him, if he were to take another job, I think it would be a good step up from there. I don't think it's going to be anything. I see no way in the world he ends up in Lincoln, Nebraska.
No, honestly. I agree.
I don't see that at all. That's going to be a pretty tough job. I think they're going to get somebody... I mean, shoot, I could see them going and get one of the Sun Belt coaches. I mean, who in the Sun Belt didn't pull off an upset last week? I mean, App State, Marshall. I mean, so I could see them going. I think they're going to go after somebody a little bit younger, maybe up and coming, because I don't know anybody who's established. I just can't see anybody wanting to go there right now, to be honest with you, because that's a tough place to recruit right now, too. I mean, you
Absolutely.
Look at the Midwest, it's not loaded with talent, but – you know, if you look at Nebraska, I mean, I don't think they're going to get back to what they used to be
in the
90s, 80s, 90s. But there's no reason at Nebraska they shouldn't do as good or better than Iowa or Iowa State or Minnesota. Like, they're way behind those programs, and that shouldn't be happening. So,
oh, agreed.
But, yeah, I wanted to get into that a little bit. How bad do you have to be at your job that – your buyout right now, Scott Frost, is $15 million. In 3 weeks, on October 1st, it drops from 15 to 7.5, so in half. They said, screw it. We're going to go ahead and pay you the full 15 to get you out of our sight. All they had to do was wait 3 more weeks, and they could have paid only half that buyout. How bad do you have to be to get canned before October 1st when your buyout drops in half? I mean, that's unreal, honestly. You know, we predicted that.
He'd be gone.
Yeah, I mean, no stepping out on a big limb there. But we predicted he'd be gone. But I figured they would at least wait to the 1st, honestly. It did surprise me a little bit. But, man, they are bad.
I mean, absolutely.
Clay Helton's Georgia Southern team comes into Lincoln and beats them. Like that 16-31 for Frost, you got to go, pal.
I agree.
That is rough. So, but yeah, how bad do you have to be? And man, I'm gonna be on just a little change of subject here. The best job in life, honestly, is a failed football coach.
Absolutely.
Is it not?
Get a lap full of millions to do nothing.
Yeah, I mean,
sign me up.
Yeah, I mean, like. I mean, honestly, one of the best gigs right now is Gus Malzahn's job. I mean, he gets all the money from Auburn. He gets run off from there, gets the big buyout, and then now he folded the other night.
Yeah, he did.
It cost me some money. So
kind of a lot like you're talking about with Bama's offense. He just is so stick to the script and doesn't change, which he was that way at Auburn, so I'm not surprised. I mean, that's just the way he's always been.
Yeah.
But he was that way. He just is what it is. Not Mackenzie Milton. That was when Scott Frost was at UCF. What's his name? Who's their quarterback now? Plumlee. John Rice Plumlee. Dude, poor him, man. He couldn't get nothing going Saturday night.
Yeah. So, obviously, like I said, I would love to be a failed football coach, man. And that was funny the other day. I'm sure you heard coming out. Ed Orgeron, he was at the some quarterback club or something like that, and telling the story about getting fired at LSU is hilarious. Because, coach, things are not things are not going well. And he goes, well, no shit, Ray Charles can see that. And then he goes, Coach, we're going to give you, you got $17.1 million on your contract. We're going to give it to you. And he goes, well, what door you want me out of, or what time and what door you want me out of, brother? Like, that is hilarious. But, yeah, I would love to be a failed football
coach. Oh, absolutely.
Fantastic. But, yeah, Scott Frost. And honestly, everybody at the time, me included, I thought it was going to be a really good hire. I thought we did really, obviously did really good at UCF. And for whatever reason, it never got off the ground.
He couldn't get it going. Something that has got off the ground, though, Sam Pittman and them Razorbacks.
Yeah.
They are hot. And honestly, KJ Jefferson threw the ball 21 times. He was 18 for 21, so he had a fantastic day. But then he got Rocket Sanders, and he carried the ball for, I believe it was 24 times for 156 yards.
Yeah.
Rocket Sanders was the Razorbacks' offense this week. South Carolina had absolutely no answer for him. KJ Jefferson ran the ball pretty well. Like I said, he threw it, you know, 18 for 21, pretty good day. But all they did was run the ball. They established a run, and they were able to shove it down South Carolina's throat. And South Carolina made a late push on their comeback. At one point, I think it was 30-something to 16, and then the game ended like 44 to 30 or whatever it was.
Yeah.
But Arkansas is the real deal. And you know, like you were saying, Bama's got them soon. And yeah, with how they came off Texas, I would definitely not be worried, but I'd be anxious when that game comes, because you know that the Razorbacks got that one circled.
Oh, I'm anxious right now, and it's almost 3 weeks away. Yeah. So, it's going to be a tough game, especially in their place. They're going to be confident coming off the way they played last year. I just love the way they play, because, like, there's no, like, they know who they are, and they're going to, like, here it is, stop it. You know what I mean? Like, hey, we're coming out and we'll run the football right at you.
Yep.
Like, I just love the way they play. They stay true to themselves. They don't try to be somebody they're not. And they come out and establish the run. They're physical up front. And like you said, they just mauled South Carolina up front. And on the other side of the ball, you know, it wasn't a great day for Spencer Rattler, but man, his offensive line's not good either. I mean, he had pressure on him most of the day
And they can't run the ball. Spencer had to throw the ball 39 times.
Yeah.
I mean, he had 370 yards passing, which is a good day, but he threw a pick, and he only had one touchdown. But they had to throw the ball 40 freaking times because they could not run it. Their offensive line, like you said, is garbage, and I feel bad for Spencer. But if they didn't have Spencer, they would be much worse than they are. But I like Shane Beamer. It's just harder to build a program like South Carolina. It's going to take a little bit longer, but he'll have him back, I believe. The players, you can see the buy-in the players have. Even in the loss, you can see that, because, like I said, it was I might have been 28-16 or whatever. It was getting out of hand, but they still fought back and only lost by two touchdowns and made it a respectable game. Like, they have the buy-in for Shane Beamer, and they have that fight in them, and that's why I like watching South Carolina play. They've always been that way. They're not expecting to win the SEC every year, but they are going to have a dogfight every Saturday, no matter who they play, no matter what the score is. So I like that about South Carolina, and I like that Shane Beamer has continued to have that mentality brought to down there at South Carolina.
Yeah, because I think, too, and, you know, you can work around some other areas, but it's almost impossible to work around the offensive line.
Oh, like, yeah.
If your offensive line's not at least solid,
it's going to show.
It's going to show, and it's going to show often. And that's kind of how it was Saturday. So that's, you know, that's definitely – that's a tough area to – you know, you can work around, you know, certain areas, maybe coach around, scheme around it a little bit, try to hide some of those deficiencies a little bit. You can't hide the offensive line deficiencies. So that's definitely – that's going to make it tough sledding for them this year. But like you said – you know, they've got pieces there, but you got to be good in the trenches, and that's an area that they're still developing. But like you said, they would be a lot worse without Spencer Rattler, and obviously they dealt with that a lot last year and overachieved really with what they had. But, I mean, Arkansas just comes out and does what they do. I mean, physical up front, we're going to run the football right at you, and I mean, they're legit. I mean, they're a great team, and I'm really excited for that game in a couple weeks, October the 1st, the day Scott Frost should have been fired.
Yeah.
Well, he really should have been fired before that, but That's still amazing to me, honestly.
I agree. But the only thing about the Alabama-Arkansas game is Arkansas's defense, they're still kind of shaky. I mean, they gave up 30 points to South Carolina. Spencer Rattler threw for 370-plus yards on them. I mean, Antoine Wells Jr. had 189 receiving yards. I mean, he was open all day. But, I mean, they were able to limit it. But Alabama's offense is going to be able to move the football. And if Arkansas's defense continues to go the way that it's going now, it's going to be a shootout, I think. But, I mean, the juices are going to be flowing, and everybody's going to be locked in 110% more than just a regular game day when they're playing Alabama. But I think Bama has a good chance just because of the inconsistency of Arkansas's defense, especially that secondary right now. Jalen Catalan's really – he's solid. But other than that, it's kind of – they're not super consistent. I know we've only seen him play 2 weeks, but yeah. – They've got to get better. There's times they look really good on some drives, and then some drives it's like they don't even know what they're doing out there.
Yeah, that's a big blow for them too, because Catalan's out for the season.
I did not see that.
Yeah, I think he injured his shoulder again. I think so. He's actually out for the year, so that's gonna be that's a big blow for them. I think with that game just specifically, like you said, I do think if Arkansas was a little better in the secondary, it would concern me even more. But I do think that benefits Alabama a little bit is Arkansas' strength to run the football, Alabama's strength on defense is stopping the run.
Yep.
Like, I just don't think teams are going to be super successful trying to run on them. So I do think that does – I think their strength does play in Alabama's strength on defense a little bit. So I do think that'll help some. But I wanted to get your take a little bit on before we get into Tennessee, I want to talk about Auburn a little bit. Huge game coming up with Penn State.
Can't wait.
Gonna be awesome. But you were there Saturday night, so I just wanted to get your thoughts about the San Jose State game, and then obviously what you're thinking and what you saw that gives you confidence or concern leading into this week's game against Penn State.
What gives me confidence is the defense and the ability to pressure the quarterback. San Jose State's quarterback, he could run. He didn't run a whole lot, but he was able to move away from pressure and to extend plays because of his athletic ability.
He made some nice throws, too.
He was good. He had a game. Going back from the week one, they made great, great leaps ahead from what they were week one. But I was very annoyed with our offense. We just sputtered at times. It's like we couldn't find our rhythm, like the way you were saying, Bama couldn't. Yeah. We just couldn't find a rhythm. TJ didn't make great decisions. We had two turnovers. Both TJ and Robbie threw a pick. But it's just, I don't know. The offense is obviously the question mark, going to be the question mark all year until we prove that we found a quarterback. But I don't know that that's going to happen anytime soon. The defense is going to have to nut up this week, and they're going to have to – they don't have to win us the ball game, but it's going to be up to them if we can win this ball game or not, because our run defense is very good, but our pass defense is not that great. Our secondary is pretty weak. I mean, their dude Jonathan Lockhart or something – number 11 for San Jose State.
Yeah, Lockhart, I believe.
That dude tore us up. He was open every single time, and he had 5 yards of cushion every time he caught the ball. So our secondary – and that could have been the coverage we were playing or whatever, but it was at all freaking night. So that's what scares me a little bit. I know Penn State likes to run the football, but they can throw it. They got a 6-year quarterback in the backfield.
Yeah.
He can throw it. I mean, he threw it. He had to throw it a couple times last year, and he made us pay. But I believe the Auburn's defense is going to be able to stop their run. That's just what we're built on. But the secondary for Auburn is what scares me about this Penn State game. Are we going to be able to lock it in? Because right now, offensively, we can't score. I don't believe that we're going to be able to score with the team if they can just throw it all over us.
Yeah, I think this is one of those games where – I don't see either offense pulling away from the other. Right? This is a classic one possession type game. I think
those are fun.
Yeah, it's going to be. I'm hard pressed to see it multiple possessions either. It's going to be a fourth quarter one possession type game because I just don't think either offense really's got the firepower against the opposing defense to be able to really pull away. I see it being. I see it being a great game, but I know you're happy this year that Jahan Dotson's not on that Penn State.
Thank God.
He's on our favorite NFL team, and he scored two touchdowns in his debut and looked fantastic. And that guy is legit.
Yeah, so I know you're off the field.
I know you're very happy he's not suiting up for Penn State Saturday night.
Couldn't be happier because he beat us last year, but it was him. It was a John Dotson show.
Yeah.
But one thing, Auburn fans, I don't know. I kind of don't know how I feel about this going into this week, and it's not set in stone. It's not for sure. There's just been some reports out. Owen Papo and Derek Hall, two of the four captains, obviously both on the defense, but they have pitched. Auburn is wearing the orange face mask again like they did in the Iron Bowl last year for the Penn State game. But Owen Papo and Derek Hall have pitched to the coaches. They've been pitching for a while, they said, that they're going to try to bring back the old Auburn orange jerseys that they wore. I believe it was in the 70s when they wore them every once in a while. So they're going to try to pitch it to bring back the orange jersey for the Penn State game, along with the orange face mask. They said they want to go away from tradition or break away from tradition for this game. Don't know why. Auburn's built on tradition. I don't necessarily know if I like it or not. I was not alive, obviously, in the 70s. My dad, he saw the Auburn wear orange a couple times. He said, I believe it was when Little Train James was playing. I could be wrong on the years, but I do know they used to wear it back then. Every once in a while. So I'm not really sure how I feel about it because it really, seeing the pictures, it looks a lot like Florida's orange jerseys.
Yeah.
But if they look clean, I'm not going to lie. I'm going to like it. And if we win, I don't really care what we look like. But I just, I was just curious to see what the Auburn thoughts were on that. But yeah, there's a potential that they could come out in the Auburn orange.
Is it orange jerseys and pants, or is it just jerseys?
Orange jerseys.
And then what, just be white pants?
The same pants, I believe.
Yeah. I'd be curious to see that.
I know it's not orange pants, but I believe it's the exact same pants as regular.
Gotcha. Okay, I figured so. I didn't know they were doing that, so I'm going to keep my eye on that and see if they end up doing that. That'd be, like I said, we've never seen them
other than
pictures. So, but yeah, that'd be interesting for sure, but this is going to be a great matchup, like you said. 6-year quarterback for Penn State. I just don't see either offense built to really pull away from one another. It's just a classic one possession type game, honestly. I think the line right now, I think Penn State's at 3. I think they open at 3. So, I don't know, man. I think about it because Sean Clifford, they've got the more experienced quarterback, but it's like, it's tough for me to pick a since the matchup is so close, it's hard for me to pick against Auburn in that environment though. And when the matchup's that close,
able to get pressure on the quarterback against San Jose State, but again, he was just able to run. He could move. He was much more athletic and a better runner than Sean Clifford is. Not saying Sean Clifford can't run and get away from pressure and elude pressure and extend plays. He definitely can. He did last year multiple times.
Mm-hmm.
But he can't do it to the same ability that the San Jose State quarterback could. And we were consistently getting pressure. So that's what I'm confident in, that ability that we could shut the passing game down from that aspect of getting pressure and forcing him to run out of the pocket and throw the ball away or whatever it is. But our secondary has got to tighten up. And we were playing San Jose State. It's harder to get up for those games. The stadium wasn't even fully – it wasn't at full capacity. There was a lot of people that left. A lot of people left early because it started raining in the first quarter. It only rained for like 3 minutes. Me and Jenny toughed it out because we're true fans, along with a lot of other of us. But there was people that left, and the stadium just wasn't full capacity. But this week, it is going to be rocking. There was times, in the game against San Jose State when we were up and in the third quarter, we had just taken the lead or whatever it was, and pretty much you could feel the game was in our possession, even though it was a tight game. I think we were up 3, 17, 14, I think is what it was. But you could just feel that Auburn was going to win the game. They had started getting control of it.
Mm-hmm.
And in an environment like that, if we're playing any SEC team or a team of a Power 5 team, the stadium is going to be deafening, and no one's going to be on their seat. No one's going to be just sitting there. Everybody's going to be screaming their head off, and that's what it's going to be for 60 straight minutes against Penn State. And that's the thing that I'm excited to see, because we haven't seen Auburn jacked up yet this year at playing in a big-time game. They played Mercer and San Jose State, so that does have an effect. Whether people believe it does or not, it might not should have an effect, because you should play every game the same, but it does have an effect whether you believe it or not. So I'm excited to see what we're truly made of when we're faced with a real test.
Yeah, it's gonna be good. I mean, we talked about this game a lot last year.
I mean, talked about it. I feel like every week since last season.
Yeah, so I'm excited to see them go at it again. Yeah, I don't know what the over-under is going to be. I'm laying to the under, though, because I think it's going to be one of those it's going to be one of those defensive-type games, I think, unless you get a couple turnovers, maybe turned into points. But, I'm excited to see it. And the environment, like I said, it's just it is hard for me to pick against Auburn when the matchup's that, when it's, like I mentioned before, kind of like one of those toss-up games. It's just hard for me to pick against them in that environment.
Okay, so from an outsider looking in, I got to ask you, I've said for weeks now that I think that by week 4 or 5, we're going to have a set quarterback. I think it's going to be Robbie right now, but I think by that time, when you're entering SEC play for sure, you have 6 straight weeks of SEC play or 7, whatever it is, you have to have a quarterback. And you can say you don't have to have one, you can run a dual system. Yeah, you can, but you really need that guy that the offense can look at that can be that leader, that is the guy. That's what's going to make the offense better, to have him in there all the reps in practice, all the reps in the game. It's going to create that continuity between the receivers and the quarterback and the lineman and the quarterback, the run, all that. It's going to create that relationship with them.
Mm-hmm.
Who do you think, from what you've seen so far, outside looking in, what do you expect the timetable to be on that? I know that they're going to run dual quarterback system again this week because no one has stepped up to say, I am the legit better one. They both had turnovers this week. Robbie hasn't thrown the ball a whole lot. Pretty much 95% of the time he's in there, it's a read option or a direct quarterback draw.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, and it works. I mean, the dude's fast. He gets around the edge. You're not going to catch him for at least 20 yards. Like, it's just the way it is.
Yeah.
But from what you've seen, who do you think is going to end up taking this job over if it does, or when it does, become a guy for Auburn?
Well, I will say this. If you're asking me as an opposing fan or whatever, like, who scares me more? Robbie Ashford scares me more.
Absolutely.
Like, I would rather face TJ than Robbie. So, if that tells you anything, I just think he just brings a little more to the table with his legs are so dynamic. Obviously
the reports on that is that he doesn't have quite the grasp on the playbook that TJ does, and he still struggles passing not quite as good as TJ from reports, but continue.
Yeah, like you said, I think, which is to be expected. Yeah, right. Obviously TJ's been there a lot longer. Somebody with his kind of athletic ability and running ability, it just scares me a little bit more. Mm-hmm. So I think he just adds such a different dynamic than that nobody else can add there. So I think
you can feel it too.
Yeah, you can feel it. You know what I mean? It's like
nothing against TJ. It's just there's that vibe when Robbie's in there, something big or crazy is about to happen.
Exactly. He's got that. Like you say with running backs, a lot of them got that home run ability.
Right.
He's kind of that same class. Like when TJ's in there, you don't have to be concerned with him taking off or adding that extra dimension.
Right.
But man, when Robbie's in there, man, he's so explosive. Yeah, it's another thing to defend. And if he can continue to develop as a passer and get more comfortable in that aspect, I think he'll definitely take the job over. But I think if you're asking me just who would you rather face, I think I'd probably rather face TJ because I think, like I said, that home run ability of Robbie, that's a tougher element to defend a lot of times.
It can definitely change a game in an instant.
So I'm very curious to see how they utilize him against Penn State this week. Do they do it even more? Do they do it less? Do they keep it about the same as they've been doing the first 2 weeks? That's what I'm curious to see, because I mean this is one that, you know, you have a little more freedom to do that in the games they've been playing. You know, against Penn State, you know, it's not going to be multiple possession game more than likely.
Right.
So I'm curious to see how they utilize him, if it's even more than they've been doing. Do they give him a little more on his plate, or is it a little bit less because it's a bigger opponent, or how they do that will be curious to me to see.
What I think is that they're definitely going to use him. It's probably going to be around the same, I would have to say. But I feel like his role and the way they use him is going to be different. So for 2 weeks, like I said, 95% of the time he's back there. He's taking off with it. He's just going to run. Is it going to be a read, or it's a quarterback draw straight up? And that's just what he does. But guaranteed they're setting it up. But I feel like this is the week they're going to throw that wrinkle in there for him, and he might – you know, do a little play action, fake read, launch it down the field, you know, give us a quick little six or something.
Yeah.
I ain't saying that's what it is, but there's going to be a point in the season where we put Robbie in and you're just going to expect him the same old, he's just going to run it around the end.
Yep.
And he's going to pull it off and he's going to hit you for a big play. I believe that they have been setting that up for this week because this is a must-win game, especially if we want to do what Auburn is trying to do and win a championship, an SEC championship, and compete for that. I'm expecting to see something different from Robbie with his packages this week instead of the same old, same old.
Yeah, I think that's what I'm most curious to see is, you know, how they choose to utilize him. Because that's just another element that Penn State's going to have to prepare for. Obviously,
right.
You know, they're saying okay when Astra comes in the game, I expect him to run. I mean, obviously everybody knows what kind of athlete he is, but I wouldn't be shocked at all if they don't pull out a wrinkle and hit one of those playmakers deep. So that's what I'm really wanting to see Saturday is how they utilize him. You know, if his usage is up even more, you know, that's going to be curious to see. Because I feel like you'll find out even more what they're going to do forward because this is their first big test. You know. So, I just think he gives a little bit more. Because I think if TJ had been even more effective early, you know, if he wasn't missing some of those throws, I would probably say him. But I mean, it's not like he's just been dead. Yeah, he's been inconsistent too. So. I just think if you add it up with TJ's throwing ability, if he had been better in that area, I would probably say him. But he hasn't been good enough in that area to make up for what Robbie can give you in the run game. You know what I mean?
I agree.
So I just think that I would rather face. You know, I wouldn't want to see Robbie more, I think. So,
and receiver, honestly, my biggest thing for this week is receivers. Receivers got to step up. We had too many drops last week. We had a lot of drops last year against Penn State. That cost us a lot of drives, late third down drops for first downs or for big plays that we have just got to come down with. So, offensive line really hasn't been playing as bad as I expected it to be, I guess. But granted, we haven't faced that type of competition. But I think that if our receivers take a step forward this week, that it's going to give us a lot better chance because we had way too many drops last week. Guys were catching the ball at the first down marker, getting hit, dropping it, or just straight up through their hands, running. We had a couple guys run some bad routes that were wide open and just bad routes to the ball. Receivers, I think, are going to make or break this week because we're going to run the ball. We know what we have at the back position, but the receivers have got to step up and give us another dimension of the offense that is going to make the defense step back. Because if they crowd up or they load the box to stop the run and we start throwing it on them, they're going to have to back off and then we can run again. I mean, that's football. It's football 101, but we're going to have to catch the ball and prove that we can go and stretch the field, or we're going to get pummeled because. We're going to have to run the ball to prove that we can stretch it down the field. And if they're just stacking the box because we can't catch it, it's going to be a long night.
Yeah. Before we wrap it up, I want to get into Tennessee a little bit as well. Big ranked win, road win against Pitt in overtime, 34-27. I thought with Tennessee, thought their defense played pretty well, especially in the second half. You know, I thought – wasn't Tennessee's best offensive day, but they were able to hit some big plays. Wasn't maybe as smooth as they've been, but obviously Hendon Hooker, Cedric Tillman, they're big time, came up with some huge plays. Hit Brew McCoy on a deep ball. So, you know, a lot of hype around him. He's been at USC, Texas, now Tennessee, and he's played pretty well for them so far too. But... The one of the things that stood out for me for Tennessee defensively is, man, they constantly got pressure on Keaton Slovis, knocked him out of the game, actually. They pressure Pitt's quarterbacks all day. I thought that was a good sign for Tennessee. I thought they looked like they certainly took a step forward defensively. And even though they scored 34, this game, especially in the second half, was really kind of won because of their defense.
Oh, yeah.
And that hasn't happened for them. You know, obviously that's been their big question more. How's their defense going to develop? So just wanted to get your thoughts on that a little bit. And I thought, you know, I think if you're a Tennessee fan, I think yeah, maybe one of your most crisp offensive day, even though you put up a pretty good number, but to kind of be able to win a game because of your defense, I think that's got to make Tennessee fans feel pretty good, because not every day your offense is just going to be humming like it's used to, or like it, you know, normally does for them.
Right.
So I think, you know, as a UT fan, I think you got to feel pretty good that your defense really stepped up in a big way.
I agree 100%. What I expected to happened. I thought it was going to be a really close game. Mm-hmm. I didn't expect it to go to overtime. I'm glad it went to overtime, and I'm glad Tennessee had the ball first and scored, because it gave us the cover.
Yes,
so it cashed out for me, you know. Yes, and then, you know, their defense stepped up right there to hold Pitt, but obviously Pitt had to go for it. They had to score. But so their defense did step up, and they did win the game. But that second half, like you said, was huge. Their defense really, you know, sacked up and took control of the game, and really, like you said, won in the game. But they really went. The second half was controlled by Tennessee's defense, and that was what, in the end, allowed them to come out on top.
Yeah, because they, I mean, like I said, it really surprised me how they got pressure on the court, regardless of who the quarterback was. I mean, they seemed to get consistent pressure. They got a lot of sacks in the game, a lot of pressures. So, yeah, I think, you know, like I said, if you're a Tennessee fan, I think you got to feel pretty good that you saw a really good sign from your defense and a good step forward, because being able to get pressure on a team like that was definitely big for them. And I think that's going to benefit them a lot going forward, because I know Florida didn't play well this past weekend, but you know, that's going to be a huge game here in less than 2 weeks in Knoxville, because I know Anthony Richardson, you know, had a bad game, but he's still a dynamic player.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, they're going to need their defense to step up against Florida, and that's going to be a huge matchup coming up, among others, ahead for Tennessee. But, yeah, I thought that was a good sign for them on Saturday, and for them to start off 2-0 hadn't happened a whole lot lately. You know, they've struggled for a while now. So they're definitely heading in the right direction. They're an entertaining team to watch for sure.
Absolutely. And more than likely, we're going to do a Twitter space this week for our bet picks. It'll either be on Wednesday night or Thursday night. That'll be, follow us on Twitter at @Saturdays_SEC. You'll get our notification for the Twitter space, and you jump in, join us, share your picks, share your thoughts on, you know, what we're going to be talking about that week. But we're glad that y'all tuned in to this week's episode of Saturdays in the SEC. We'll see you back next week.
The best conference right now. It's really not that close. The SEC is the best conference.